sitting back in your rose pink Cadillac, making bets on Kentucky Derby Day. Recognize that? Sure you do. That's the Rolling Stones' Dead Flowers, the fourth song on the second side of their best album, Sticky Fingers. Whether ranking Sticky Fingers ahead of Exile on Main Street, or, dare I say it, and I'm not just being provocative, 2005's A Bigger Bang, is an argument we can have for another day. But that isn't why I'm playing Dead Flowers. I'm playing Dead Flowers because for 40 years now, that's the song I blast first thing in the morning every first Saturday in May. That's what happened in Athens in 1985. I was playing Sticky Fingers and George walked in just as the recording of this verse was amplified. George said, "It is Kentucky Derby Day." And it was. So it became a tradition. I don't know whether it helped kindle my lifelong love or the Triple Crown or not. So today we're talking thoroughbreds and how we can take the Triple Crown and make it even more compelling than it already is. Would watching a race with 300-pound jockeys be more fun than watching a race with no jockey at all? And we'll talk about racism, if any horse of any color can qualify being the Jackie Robinson of horse racing. Given the number of horses who win by a nose, I predict enterprising breeders will soon focus on breeding horses with really, really long noses. Like noses as long as a horse. Imagine the finish line advantage. Let me try that again. Given the number of horses who win by a nose, I predict enterprising breeders will soon focus on breeding horses with really, really long noses. Like noses as long as a horse. Imagine the finish line advantages. Rachel Alexander won the 2009 Preakness Stakes. Here's what I wrote about it after they talked about how much she'd be put to stud for the female version of it. I admit this is going to sound sexist, but when I learned what was planned for Rachel Alexander's future, my first thought was, that's slut. I don't know why I'm surprised. It's the way of the world. Already the girl really gets around. She got around Pimlico on Saturday in 1 minute, 55 seconds, and 8.8 seconds. She's the first filly to win the second leg of the Triple Crown in 85 years, and only the fifth in the 134-year history of the Preakness Stakes. Those are the kind of numbers that get pulses racing. Jess Jackson is the filly's owner. One report described him as a Kendall Jackson wine magnate, a term they left undefined. I like to think it's a typo that means whenever he strolls down the aisles of a liquor store, bottles of wine come flying to off the shelves and bond to the 79-year-old entrepreneur. Despite his advanced age, he spends a great deal of time thinking of horse sex, and in no way does that mean he's deviant. The fourth most famous race in the sport is tastelessly called the Breeders' Cup. How the refined men and women who dabble in what is known as the sport of kings aren't lumped in with common pimps must be just another exception of privilege. That's what struck me when I read that Jackson is eyeing a breeding jackpot with the filly. He already owns the stallion Curlin, winner of the 2007 Preakness, and insiders say it's a sure thing he's going to usher the pair off to the breeding barn. As a romantic who's always eager for new techniques to please the missus, I decided to research what goes on behind the big doors of the breeding barn. You can check it out on Mike Rowe's Dirty Jobs show on the Discovery Channel. There are no roses, no sonnets, no sweet nothings. It's all very clinical. The stud comes in, does his business, and I guess leaves behind an insincere note with a made-up phone number for the spent mare. Then there was this disturbing passage that could have easily applied to me in any unfortunate date from back when I was about 24. Try this. Whenever the paragraph mentions the stallion or its male pronoun, just substitute Chris and read on. Make sure Chris mounts the mare in a controlled and reasonable fashion. Too many over-enthusiastic or fresh young Chrises will be so anxious to start copulating that they will try to mount from the side and or thrust with no rhyme or reason. This can frustrate both Chris and the mare, and neither option is particularly desirable. A frustrated mare can start lashing out at Chris, and the frustrated Chris will only perform worse if he allows the frustration to cloud his mind. Boy, does that take me back. It might have risked ruining the mood, but I'll bet my dates would have been thrilled if I'd have brought along a squad of white smock veterinarians to show me what goes where. Not all the research was so grim and sterile, And yes, I realize that's a poor word choice when dealing with a story about horse fertility. I found there's a sporty-looking human supermodel named Rachel Alexander, and she's often topless. I'm going to start trying this research thing more often. I'm unable to reconcile why I feel the equine Rachel Alexander is such a cheap slut for her role in breeding process when I always feel I should congratulate the male counterparts with cigars and bourbon toasts. I guess it's just the primal differences between men and women, stallions and fillies. I've been a bystander to enough Lifetime movies to know that women who wind up like Rachel Alexander always come to a moment when they realize they become what they've become. It destroys their self-esteem. They say they feel used. And I know what most men will do if we ever find ourselves in a stud role, in a moment of clarity, realize we've been used for the most base reasons. We'll say, thank you. And I was trying to find a way to make the Triple Crown more interesting, and I considered how much more fun it would be to watch the race if they had jockeys were 300 pounds each. For the good of the sport, the Triple Crown needs one race where the jockeys are jumbos. I'm proposing horse racing alter its rules so that the Derby is run not by elfin athletes, but by king-sized couch potatoes who weigh no fewer than 300 pounds each. See, the Triple Crown races are among my favorite sporting events. Combined, they conclude in under 7 minutes. The Super Bowl has interminable commercial breaks that endure that long. I want one race to take as long as the Super Bowl. I want to be able to invest a full afternoon of watching ponies sluggishly trot around the track with the occasional need to stop to graze and access a convenient water trough for quenching swigs. A 300-pound jockey would ensure this. Note that the weight wouldn't include a full cooler of beer each jockey would be allowed to strap to the saddle. The weigh-ins would be priceless viewing. Instead of traditional colors, each jockey, jumbo jockey, could wear a shirt promoting his or her favorite saloon or bowling alley. There's not a tavern in the land that couldn't field 3 or 4 bar regulars worthy of consideration. I'm drinking buddies with tons of guys who'd qualify. Or to be more accurate, I'm buddies with about 5 guys who, if thrown together in one big sack, would weigh 1 ton. And 300 is a good weight. It's ample enough to meet today's obesity standards, and not so much so that jockeys could make it without dietary supplements. Thus, pregame rituals might show plus-size jockeys scarfing down buckets of the colonel's chicken in order to make designated weight. The spectacle would flip on its head the unhealthy anorexic trends that ravage traditional diminutive jockeys obliged to starve themselves to meet the required 126 pounds. In fact, much of the pre-race hype would be devoted to another American pastime, competitive eating. And Frank, representing the Indoor-Outdoor Inn in Queens, is going double-fisted with a Whopper with triple bacon and a dangerous extra cheese pizza that was blamed for the unfortunate cardiac arrest of Tubby Tom's last year's weigh-in. But Pam from the Smiling Hog Barbecue and Foam in Biloxi is coming up on strong with a stack of baby back ribs dripping with the Holmes team sauce, now available online and in Piggly Wiggly's all across Dixie. Of course, nothing would match the excitement of the moment when the loads are loaded into the starting gates. And they're off! Or not. I speculate that with a 300-pound jockey on its back, many of these thoroughbreds wouldn't even budge. And wouldn't that be exciting? Not one horse is moving. Not one is able to manage the first step. But wait, the number 4 horse is staggering out of the gate. She's taken 4 steps. 5. Oh no, the filly's collapsed. Given those dynamics, it's likely that the one and a half mile derby would take 3 hours rather than usual 2 minutes. The final sprint down the home stretch would allow gamblers plenty of convenient time for bathroom and smoke breaks before the action got down to the wire. Now, some animal rights activists might protest that the entire spectacle might be cruel to these huge beasts. They might say they are not fit enough for the race and exertion could kill a dumb animal. And they have a point. But there's an easy fix for that. Just let them all read and sign waivers before the race. Being a gift horse in the mouth. This is back in, I guess it was around 2015. Here's what happened. It dismays me once again to be the one to correct the national sporting press for misleading the American public into thinking we're in the midst of another crisis of bad behavior. Happened again this weekend when sports pundits declared California Chrome owner Steve Coburn 61, a sore loser for his post-race explosion after the horse failed to win the Triple Crown. Coburn didn't lose, the horse did. Coburn wasn't even riding the horse. He's sore, sure, but who isn't? This was looking like the best chance we'd have at winning a Triple Crown again for a long time. One of my greatest boyhood memories was in 1973 with the old man watching the immortal Secretariat race to Belmont Park victory for what remains the most spectacular Triple Crown win in history. I've been dreaming I had bestowed that same sort of memory to our daughters. We make a big deal out of the Triple Crown races around here. The night before, we watch a movie about a horse, usually either Secretariat or Seabiscuit. True fun fact, California Chrome was nearly named Seabisquick. Then as post time nears, we enjoy the pageantry handicaps, the horses, the girls favor the fillies, and make ridiculous wagers involving things like world domination. And as the horses come down the stretch, we're all roaring cheers, urging our favorites to get their butts in gear. I love watching horse racing for the way it unites America, where sports like football divided by creating hooligan tribes of drunken fans eager to assault one another for daring to wear different colored overpriced jerseys. Being progressive on race relations, I also appreciate the horse racing because it's the one sport that doesn't rile the racists. They heavily cheer the black or the brown horse in ways they'd never cheer for, say, LeBron or the dreadheaded Richard Sherman of the Seattle Seahawks. I know many racists who hate NBA basketball because it's dominated by people of color. And as we recently learned, this prejudice includes people who actually own NBA teams. Remember this? Where, they ask, are all the white dudes? It's very offensive to enlightened souls like myself. But even bitter racists love horse racing. This is surprising because I can't recall ever seeing a single white dude rounding the track, and I'm talking here about white dudes with four legs. It's a sport so joyfully colorblind, even top horse race historians would be stumped, I'm sure, when asked to name which horse was the Jackie Robinson of thoroughbred racing. It seemed with Chrome we were seeing something special. It's everything I've read for the past 6 weeks has said that he's really a great horse, which I'm assuming means he visits children's hospitals, signs autographs, and makes the sweet old ladies blush when he flirts with them. To me, those are the hallmarks of a truly great horse. People are calling Coburn classless for saying entering a horse in the Belmont without previous giving it a go in one of the Derby or Preakness races is cowardly and classless. I agreed before learning that's the way it's always been. It happened to Secretariat, Saddle Slough, and Affirmed when they won. Winning the crown is just very difficult. But I'm going to give the old guy a pass here. His fairy tale vaporized down the home stretch and caused him to launch into a memorable meltdown. Did you see it? He raged at the other owners and said they denied America's dream we all shared. My favorite part was near the end when his nervous-looking wife, whispered he ought to cool it, a remark that caused him to turn and tell her to buzz off. Yes, behind every great man, there's a nervous woman telling him when it's time to just shut the hell up. To me, the rant was perfectly reasonable reaction by a man who'd been thrust into the limelight for which he was unprepared at the very instant his life's dream was destroyed. I hope Coburn's forgiven his graceless lapse and that he comes to appreciate the sweet side of what's been a really nice ride. Me, I'm just happy an angry, begrudged white man didn't stoop to playing the race card in the one sport where everyone who walks through the front door is handed a race card. Much of the cold in years. I'd say I was healthy as a horse if I could verify horses suffer from the occasional hangover. This one was back from when COVID was forcing sports to rearrange their schedules. I did some checking, and just as I'd feared, the only enduring national sporting event still on the calendar involves competitive hot dog eating. Yes, set your DVRs. Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest is set to take place July 4th. Its top three contestants last year ate 71, 50, and 47 hot dogs in 10 minutes. The event used to dismay me because I sensed that we could end world hunger if we're going in all-American gluttony. Now that toilet paper shortages are on, remember this was COVID, they're on everyone's mind, I wonder if an unforeseen secondary gastrointestinal benefit we could end up world wiping. Let me start that whole thing over again. The event used to dismay me because I sensed we could end world hunger by foregoing the all-American gluttony. Now that toilet paper shortages are on everyone's mind, I wonder if an unforeseen secondary gastrointestinal benefit would be we could end world wiping. I'm not going to do that again. That's enough. My fear is that by the time the hot dog contest is held, it'll be so sports deprived I'll actually give a crap. That's assuming there's enough food to keep my bowels functioning. The absence of live marquee sports is where COVID-19 is impacting a not insignificant number of shallow men like myself. Because this is maybe the best time of year to watch sports on TV. There's March Madness, NFL, NHL playoffs, the Masters and professional baseball's opening day. All gone. This was a very dark time. And I just read that one of my favorite events, the Kentucky Derby, has postponed until September. The move seems short-sighted, and please don't interpret that as a cheap short joke about the diminutive jockeys. In fact, I propose they run the race as scheduled for the first time without jockeys. I mean, are jockeys really necessary to horse racing? I'm no NASCAR fan, but I appreciate the necessity of a human driver to an automobile race. There's a reason every race begins with the announcer dramatically intoning, and it's been a while, so I'm guessing here, "Gentlemen and Danica Patrick, start your engines." Without the human driver, the sport would be like 3 hours of drinking overpriced domestic beer and staring from far at a crowded parking lot full of expensive cars with parts decals. God help me right now, even that sounds fun. But the horse doesn't need a human to run around a track. Now, fuddy-duddy purists will say jockeys are essential to enjoying the most exciting 2 minutes in sports. That's bull crap. Horse crap, actually. In fact, if I have any complaint about Derby Day, it has nothing to do with the pageantry or the conditions and could everything to do with brevity. What could be better than a 2 minute, 2 mile and a quarter race? How about a 2 hour one? That's what might happen to a jockeyless race. And they're off. Or not. With no jockeys to kick or whip the animals, hello PETA, into motion, these thoroughbreds might just stand there giving viewers a chance to sip fine Kentucky bourbon and bask in their magnificence. Race officials could then introduce primal incentives to coax the horses around the track. I'm thinking a bucket of premium oats, or better still, a pretty filly in fragrant heat. My, the times if I'd have dashed around a mile and a quarter track for that kind of recreation. So I hope they can, with some alterations, still hold the Kentucky Derby. I need something to get me through the spring sports drought. Either that or else I'm going to have to start following the news more closely. Tell me, anything going on I should know about? Anything at all? You heard of the Last Supper? Today in Youngstown, we commemorated the last breakfast. Our friend Scott Levin is selling the Youngstown Grill and moving to Florida. It is my understanding that the new owners intend to run a seamless transition. Good, we're all rooting for them. As for Scott, we're going to miss him, me especially, because he would always loudly announce my entrance by saying, "And here's Chris Rodell, the world-famous author." I'd vanquish the glorious falsehood by pointing out anyone who is truly world-famous ought not to need any kind of introduction in his tiny hometown diner just 0.7 miles from his front door. Guaranteed he never once introduced a truly world-famous customer with, "And here's Arnold..." Thanks, Scott. Best of luck to you, buddy. And thanks for all the great conversations, too.